Captain's log, stardate 41463.9. While mapping the Pleiades cluster, we have been asked by the Federation to visit a group terraforming Valara 3. Communications have been erratic, and there is some concern about their welfare.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske File. We are continuing our Let's Watch Star Trek The Next Generation. We're up to episode 18 of season 1. This one's called Home Soil. It was directed by Corey Allen. Teleplay credit goes to Robert Sabaroff, and the story credit goes to Robert Sabaroff, Carl Gurs, and Ralph Sanchez. It aired way back in February 22nd, 1988. The quick synopsis for this one is that in this episode, the crew of the Enterprise investigates the murder of a crewman on a terraforming colony and discovers a crystalline life form possessing intelligence on that planet. And for this one, we're going to be joined by Clay again. He's a returning veteran. Been here for a couple previous episodes and hopefully a couple more in the future. And we get into this episode and much more, including the what we think, a couple light thoughts about what we think about the newest movies in Star Trek and where the series could go as a television show in the future, and if it even deserves to be on television at this point in terms of where television has ended up. So that's pretty much it for there. You can follow the show at That Penske File on Twitter. Like and comment and leave reviews if you're on iTunes or YouTube. It's very much appreciated. And you can also, as soon as I type this in, you can follow Clay on Twitter at Dead Meat Comic. So that's Clay at Dead Meat Comic. So give him a follow. And thank you very much for your support, and we'll get into the show right after this.
Ugly. Ugly. Giants. Bags of mostly water.
Bags of mostly water.
An accurate description of humans, sir. You are over 90% water surrounded by a flexible container.
All right, Home Soil, episode 18, something like that. I think it's 18 anyway. But we're back with Clay.
Hello.
How's everyone doing? And I guess we'll just start off with like basic sort of thoughts about this. I think this is actually the first somewhat good episode of Star Trek that we've seen so far.
Yes, this is definitely the best one that I've been a part of.
Out of these early ones. Yeah. I think it's like the first one that actually felt like a Next Generation episode. Mm-hmm. I felt everyone's mm-hmm. role was good. Everyone kind of made sense. And the plot just progressed in a general way.
Yeah.
I think mm-hmm. there's a huge script hole problem.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I thought it was pretty good.
So. Yeah, it was great that, you know, there was no external thing that sounded way more interesting that was off screen that we never got to see.
Yep, we were right there in the actual action of things.
Yeah.
No, it's, I guess let's start off with the sort of thing I'm talking about. This is the first time that Troy has actually been useful.
I was thinking the same thing.
And that's the way she should be in every episode.
Yeah.
And I think even later on, they continue to screw her up.
But yeah, the fact that she's borderline psychic or is psychic, I don't know what the parameters...
empathic, they call her.
I don't know what the parameters of her powers are, but the fact that she can do that and she's not an integral part of, like, everything is very surprising.
No, every time that they talk to someone, Picard should do his little suspicious mute thing that no one ever seems to think is very problematic while he whispers into someone's ear.
Yeah.
But he should do that every time they talk to somebody. And it doesn't make any sense why this is the first episode where she hasn't just been like, I sense danger, and then armed guards come in the door. And it's like, oh, thanks, Troy. Like, you really did a lot there.
She was much less of a plot convenience in this one. It seemed like she actually, I mean, she... The first thing that she says in that, you know, convenient mute button thing, she kind of gets the ball rolling with the plot, and along the way, her things that she's sensing are actually helpful.
Yes.
Instead of just being like, I sense a disturbance in the force kind of things.
Yeah, and it's funny because now I'm watching the first season episodes, and it's like, you can tell they're getting a little better, especially this episode, just because I was like, that scene in Picard's ready room... Where Picard yells at the main doctor, the older doctor guy.
Yes.
I was like, oh, wow, Picard really jumped on him pretty quick. Like, he certainly was suspicious of him very early.
Oh, okay.
Later on. And then when he leaves, and Riker's like, boy, you really jumped on him. I was like, oh, that's actually good writing. They're starting to recognize things. Yeah. And then Picard shuts him up and asks Troy, and she's like, yes, Captain, your plot worked to, like, make him angry, because now we know that it's like...
oh, it's actually characters.
Right.
Character skills working.
Well, with a show like this that is sort of plot-centered more than character-centered,
yep,
it takes a while before you can start to tell stories that actually use the characters and their personalities.
Yeah.
Because up, you know, most of them up until this point, they're everybody on the ship is basically a plug-in,
yep,
for whatever needs to happen in the plot.
Yep.
It's not until later when it gets becomes a better show.
Yep.
When they're much more familiar with who the characters are, how the characters work, which allows them to write stories for characters and have, oh, well, Riker wouldn't act this way in this situation.
Yep.
Have that make sense. Whereas the early ones, it's just like, all right, this is where Yar comes in and says two or three things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what she did in this episode.
Yeah,
I mean, that's all she does. Yeah. I can see why she left. I can see why she left, but on the other hand, I don't know why she left. But
no. And on a personal thing, I can't blame her, but I do get annoyed by how much she clings to, like, the Denise Crosby.
Oh,
actually clings,
yeah,
to the convention thing. It's like,
yeah,
you gave up on the show.
Yeah.
Like, you can't keep coming back.
I'll tell you, though, I am dying for Riker to get a beard because,
yep,
he's just so much more creepy without a beard.
He was actually, I thought, the worst part of this episode. He has a bunch of scenes.
You mean because apparently he's never met a female authority figure that he didn't want to bone immediately?
Or an inorganic life form that he sort of creepily looks at before he beams up? Like,
that first scene when they beam down and he's talking to the woman, he's like, oh, a lady.
A lady scientist. I can't believe it. And Troy, I don't even, he gives her like a, the lady scientist like a little flirty line, like, I can't believe that you're terraforming this planet or whatever.
Yeah.
And Troy kind of, I don't know if it's Marina Sirtis, she gives him a little like, was that tone necessary?
Did
on
you say
that
terraforming? he's hilarious. Like, every scene he's in the background,
yep,
he stands like Gary Cooper in High,
yep,
Noon. He,
yep,
just stands like with his legs apart like a cowboy.
He's ready to kick some ass.
Yeah, I seriously think that he is just so tongue-in-cheek about all of this stuff.
Yeah, but, and this episode also made me, he's the, the Riker character never really changed. He basically nailed his, it's sort of goofy early,
yeah,
on because of the script, but he basically nailed the character. And that character is no different.
Does he become less of a hornball as the
he
show
does?
Goes
I think,
on? Yeah.
But that's like script stuff. He's,
yeah,
the only actor who's actually completely managed to nail what that character is.
Yeah.
And the script eventually gets rid of all his hornball.
Yeah.
Walking into people's apartments while they're crying and looking out the window.
That was weird. that was the one big problem I had with this episode was there were three scenes right in a row where all the scenes did was explain what that life form was.
Yes. I think it's a total padding in the middle.
Yeah.
I
guess that woman was, if you cut that scene with Riker and the woman where she's crying because of her dead friend or something, or I assume that's why she was crying, or
I think she was crying because of the life form.
Oh, because
of
the life form.
That they,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Either way, you could have cut that scene and it wouldn't matter.
No.
Side note, I actually just read an interview with Jonathan Frakes,
mm-hmm,
where he mentioned that, I had never heard this before, but this is pretty great, that he just heard that the opposite of a show jumping the shark,
yep,
the phrase is when a show finally gets Riker's beard.
Gets the beard.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is a great way to describe it.
No, it's true. He was in talks to, well, not in talks, but they, the
yeah,
fandom,
his name's popped up.
Fandom,
yeah,
was trying to push him to direct the third rebooted,
yeah,
Trek movie, which
I mean,
a terrible decision and won't ever happen. But
I kind of like that idea, but I would prefer, I mean, I think there are people who could do a better job with
it. I love Frakes. He's,
yeah,
but he's a television director if I've ever seen. Like,
right,
he is, even First Contact was his, and he directed,
yeah,
Insurrection, I think,
yeah,
too. But those are not.
Oh, I mean, I will not say anything bad about First Contact. I love First Contact.
But it looks like a TV movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's that, they all have that problem, but it's because they, I don't know why. You'd think some, wouldn't you think there'd be like a famous director in Hollywood be like, I fucking love Star Trek. Can,
well,
I direct,
see,
one of these
what's
things?
Interesting is, I don't know why they don't go the way the James Bond movies are going, where,
mm-hmm,
the last three James Bond movies, or the last two anyway, three counting the new one that's going to be coming out, have been directed by like, A caliber, kind of arty directors.
Yep.
who just kill it visually.
Right. What was the last Bond one?
Skyfall was done by Sam Mendes.
Mendes, yes.
And who's also doing the next one.
Yeah, and the colors are so awesome in that movie.
Well, like Roger Deakins, guy who shoots all the Coen Brothers movies.
Yep.
And then the one before that was Robert Forster, mm-hmm. I think. The guy who did, I don't know, that the guy who wrote the Peter Pan book, movie about him. Yep, I forget. But they look amazing.
Yep.
I mean, you know, script-wise, a little shaky some places, but they look really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And much like Star Wars, I'm sure if you threw out, hey, who out there wants to direct a Star Trek movie, there's a lot of good people who would come running.
Yeah, you'd have to assume. I don't know. They stick with TV directors and freaks, and it's like, good, yeah. I guess. I don't really. But yeah, that's
give it to Rob Bowman, man. The guy that he directed a bunch of Star Trek episodes, a bunch of X-Files, did the first X-Files movie, did Reign of Fire, which is the best movie about dragons you're ever going to see.
No, it's the, to bring it back as what we were talking about.
Sorry about that.
No, the director, but it's the, I thought this episode was really well directed. It was like the, Corey Allen, I guess, is the director. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of blocking shots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wrote down in the notes when they first go down to the planet and that woman gives them the tour.
Mm-hmm.
That was an excessively complicated scene that I don't know the actress was up to it, but she got through it.
Yeah.
She's wandering around carefully blocking and just spewing nonsense because she's talking about this like sci-fi science that's going on. It's like, well, she's not a great actress, but she's nailing this part right here.
Yeah, that stuff is tough to make interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that this episode did really well, and I think is where Star Trek really shines, is when they can give you that kind of technical stuff, but you actually care about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like at the beginning when she's going through, it's like, yeah, whatever. But then when they get into the science of the organism and all that kind of stuff, it, you know, I was legitimately intrigued by where it was going to go.
Yep.
And as far as blocking goes, yeah, that stuff is tough. The first time I really noticed that stuff on TV was watching Law and Order.
Yep.
Specifically SVU.
Yeah.
The guys who shoot that show are amazing at blocking.
Yeah.
Because much like Star Trek, every scene has like five or six people.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And if you can do it really well,
it's noticeable if you start to, maybe not the first time watching the show, you'll notice it because you're actually involved in the plot and everything. But after that, you're like, oh, that's, cause there was for one example, there was one, a pan shot on the bridge where, again, there's like 27 people on the bridge because all the scientists and all the crewmen are on there. And Picard walks from stage right to stage left and he talks to Riker or someone on the side, but it pans and it matches so that the three scientists are right in between them. And it's just a nice little, like, it's like, oh, it looks clean. Like everything's perfect at the end of it.
The only thing, the thing that I don't understand though is, the same thing stood out to me when we were doing Angel One, is the costuming design for the main characters are so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those Starfleet uniforms are so good, but everybody else is complete garbage. The scientists in this episode look like they were background dancers in, like, a Janet Jackson video.
I was concerned for their safety because they're working with dangerous machinery and they have, like, frilly overalls.
Having that flap open. And everybody has the flap open, so that must be how it's supposed to be worn.
Silver buttons down, and it's like, you must have a... we're talking about Enterprise, but Enterprise brings it back and makes sense because they're wearing, like, jumpsuits. And it's like, oh, this makes sense. Like, this is what you would wear. But the scientist uniforms are complete garbage in this episode.
And the set of the Enterprise itself is so good.
Mm-hmm.
But the sets of everything else is so bad.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to figure out when they got to the lab on the planet, it's like, oh man, this lab looks terrible.
Yep.
This looks like something out of the original series at best. Is that intentional because they've been there a while, or is it just a shitty production design?
No, shitty production. Just everything is square.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you don't have time to, like, round edges, so a laser beam is just a square thing that's, like, got a triangle on it, and it's like, that's...
And my favorite piece of design in this episode was in the laser room. that just had two holes on each side of the wall conveniently for the laser to fire into.
And it just shoots a beam and it goes pew and some smoke comes out and then pew.
Maybe that's where they're digging. I don't know.
That's the mining. But
it's like every time I watch this show, it's like watching the guys from Next Generation walk into an inferior show.
Yes.
Because their costumes are so damn good.
Yep.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, that makes sense. Because I do like this. I think it's like, on my rating, I'm going to give this one a 3. This is like probably as good as the first season ever gets, but I was watching it and I was like, well, it really feels like a Next Generation episode.
Yeah.
Everything kind of makes sense. The roles all work. And the script is actually strong. Like Data is the one in the laser room and it makes sense that he would be the one that could dodge the thing, the laser beam when it goes haywire.
Yep.
And then I was sitting there.
Data is faster than light.
He's faster, He doesn't look particularly. I always wonder if they remade it today with like modern CG and it would actually look impressive, but it's really just Brent Spiner just like slowly dodging back and forth.
It's about as good as Greedo shooting first.
Exactly. And when Data comes out of that thing, Geordi rescues him or whatever, it's like, oh, it'd be kind of cool if Data had like just completely mangled the laser. And he had.
Yes.
And it's like, the writing is actually like catching up to the point where what people do makes sense in a real terms.
And I love, man, okay, so when I first read the description of this episode, I almost did not want to come. Because it basically says like, there's sentient dirt that tries to kill people.
There's dirt in the
description. I was like, oh God. Oh, it's going to be one of those episodes where everybody like has an off-screen headache because it's attacking their mind or some stupid shit like that.
Yep.
But I love that there was no real like bad guy. Even the scientists, when they start breaking down what this life form is and everything, they legitimately had no idea it was there.
Yeah.
It's all basically like it's like a construction oversight that nobody realized.
Yep.
And, When they confront the scientists and the scientists are like, oh, we knew something was there, but we didn't know what it was. When Picard tells them of how sentient this thing actually is, they're legitimately surprised and legitimately,
upset by it.
Yeah. Yep. The other thing that I like that I've noticed in a couple episodes is it's like a little, subtle acting thing on Patrick Stewart's part, but he seems to play Picard as though Picard is bad at science.
Yes.
Like, which I really like.
Because
he's not just like a know-it-all. Every time they spout science stuff, he's like, yeah, okay.
There's a
What does that mean exactly?
There's a famous thing in one of the later episodes. I'll put the link in the YouTube video for everybody else when I remember it because I can't remember it now. But there's a famous scene where Data is explaining it to him, and he has this line reading. He says something like, Data's like, this comes down to red alpha. And Patrick Stewart's just reading of red alpha. It's very funny. But he continues doing that later on of not particularly understanding the science as much as absorbing it well, I guess, which is fine. That's basically his role on this, this whole ship.
But it's nice though, because you don't want everybody to know everything, and it gets really boring that way.
Right. I'm kind of surprised Data is not more famous,
You mean like in the world of the show?
Well, yeah, because when they get to the planet, they're like an android.
And well, how long have they been there?
Are they Starfleet? That was my big question.
That was the thing I feel like they give you this stuff right at the beginning.
In the captain's log.
I always miss it.
Yeah, when you don't pay attention.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what their connection was, which is why I found it interesting at the beginning when he's like, when Picard says, all right, well, unless you really don't want us to come, we're forcibly going to send an away team.
I wrote down, they invade the planet.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I didn't realize they could do that.
Unless you explicitly.
Oh, also, apparently, they never developed that technology that came out of Wrath of Khan where they can just like shoot a rocket at a planet and turn it into a rainforest.
It's true, yeah. You'd think that would have been developed more. I guess the death of Spock really, spoilers, the death of Spock really ruined, terraforming for the world. But to get back to, you were talking about the scientists didn't know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one huge issue with this plot, because they are The whole reason that this plot kicks off is because Troy, doing a good job,
right,
knows that they're highly suspicious and hiding something, very obviously.
Yeah.
And there is no reason for them to be hiding anything because nothing is really out of the normal for them.
That's a good point. Yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
And it was like, oh, that's the one weird script issue that doesn't really make any sense.
The way that she describes him at the beginning is
deliberately hiding something.
Yeah, deliberately hiding something. And every time they say, oh, we're going to come down, he starts freaking out.
Yep. Yep.
Which
makes no sense if what they're... And I like the fact that they didn't know anything was there. I think it makes it better than if they're evil scientists and like, we must terraform this planet.
Right.
But it does make the whole, that plot just kind of is like, oh, I don't know why that happened.
Yeah, that's strange. Unless, you know, he was running a illegal gambling ring down there or something.
Yeah, I mean,
something completely unrelated.
Put the whores away. Or,
all right, let's get these endangered species out of here.
These endangered crystals.
Shut down the panda mill.
Otherwise, I thought everything was fine. I don't have any real script problems with anything.
I thought the fact that they could communicate with the thing was a little much.
I thought the aliens were stupid.
Yeah.
The way they present themselves.
Yeah.
It's just, can't you have, does the universal translator have to have such a nerdy voice? Can it be like, you know, an impressively evil sounding thing when they talk?
I think it would have been cooler if they, I mean, I guess universal translators translate, I don't know. It would have been cooler if they, so since they basically were explaining that this life form was like a living computer.
Yes. Because
it was like made out of like silicone or something, you know.
Yes, so, but needs oxygen.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Whatever. It would have been cooler if maybe it conversed on some sort of like electronic scale or, you know, binary or, you know, something that was a little bit less goofier than red sacks of meat.
ugly,
get off planet.
Ugly bags of mostly water, which is,
yes, that's what it was.
It is a classic line, but they're a little bit cheesy. The aliens are just not a good.
I do like that. Data was like, well, I mean, to be fair, that's basically what you are.
It's totally accurate, Captain.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking it, but I never said it.
Been around long enough to know. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's a little bit slow. I think the episode's, I felt it was dragging.
It's slow,
the end.
But I found it pretty engaging.
Once they know that they are intelligent, it takes a surprisingly long time to get to the end.
Yes,
there's not
yes.
really any danger.
Right.
The crystals are just sitting in the ship and they're kind of looking at it.
Eventually, this will get bigger to the point where we will need to put it into a bigger room.
That is also what Riker's line was to the scientist. And Wesley's in the episode for no reason, just hanging out in sick bay just to get his appearance in there.
Gotta get his quota up.
No, I thought it was... I remember, we were talking about before we started. I remembered it being a good episode, and I think specifically when I was reviewing them, I was like, oh, I thought that was a much later, not much later, but I thought it would be like, oh, I thought that was like a second or third season episode, because I remember it not being that bad.
Yeah.
And it's really not all that terrible.
They never really explained how, well, I guess they sort of did, because they talk about how it was like sapping the energy and controlling what you could do with the computer.
It basically took over the ship.
Yeah, but... Okay, because they never really went into how... why it could control the laser at the beginning. I mean, it's the same kind of thing, but...
It needs to get to... They made it seem that it has to get to a certain size and then it can start actually doing damage to things. So I don't know, unless the planet is like a computer.
Right,
at that point, you think they'd be more effective at stopping whatever is damaging them if they can do that.
Yeah. Whatever.
No, it's... I mean, for where we are in the series, it's really not that bad of an episode. I thought the directing was good. Characters all made sense all the way through. The plot had that one big hole, but otherwise it's fine by my standards. And it's an interesting little episode for... where it comes. I have to look at who wrote this. It looked, the story credits looked like there were like five people
like
at a story
five
credit.
Five or six. Well, I think it was like one story by and then like the teleplay credit was like four.
Oh,
or
the
five
teleplay
people.
Was longer than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised with those amount of chefs in the kitchen.
Is Roddenberry dead by this point?
No.
No? Is he still
involved?
Really?
Mm-hmm. Third season is when he starts getting sick.
Really? That far? Wow, I thought it was a lot.
He gave his blessing to DS9. So when DS9 comes on, he is still around. He's sick and not able to work, but...
Now, if you ever want to sit around and discuss the finer points of intergalactic diplomacy, I guess you can do that show. I will request to be on for the episode where they go back in time to the original Enterprise, because that's the only episode I've ever seen.
Trouble with Tribbles.
Yes.
It's an awesome episode, like too. Episode. I actually just watched that, yeah. And they did a great job with the blue screen of putting
them... Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how legit
Kirk it is. Kirk's got the scene where he's, like, berating them, because it's our typical original series. They get in a fist fight in the cantina, right. Like, everyone is just blasting each other. And he's yelling at O'Brien and Bashir, who just get stuck into that thing.
Yep. Yeah, the I think this episode was a good bit of what's to come from the series in terms of showing how versatile the show can actually be, where yep. not everything has to be, you know, we have to go fight this alien or we it's like the things they were trying to do in the previous episodes that I've been on for and kind of failed at.
Yep.
They're starting to refine a little bit more.
Yep.
Where, all right, we don't have to talk about this larger rebellion going on, so yep. we can talk about politics, but right, like yeah. Gender politics.
Yeah.
We can just talk about gender politics, and in a way that's not, you know,
Planet Tumblr.
Stupid. Yeah. Which is a Planet Tumblr.
In this, you know, it's true, and on the same line of thinking, the this episode, all the previous episodes are stuff. How much time is left? 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Fuck. Here's the answer.
Yep.
And this episode actually went through and it was like, it built to an answer. The answer was still kind of found at the last minute. The aliens need light to survive.
Right. Yeah.
But at least you felt like you'd explored all other avenues. You tried to get the oxygen out of there. You tried to shut down, beam them off. It doesn't work. And then it's like, oh, you know, we figure out at the end that light is their source of energy, which makes sense. And then...
I did kind of think it was funny that the way that they were reacting to the thing taking over the ship is the way, like, people react when they lose power in their house, where it's like, I keep trying the switch, but nothing happens.
No, Geordi's...
Wait, maybe we should try the switch again? The lights are still off. I don't know what's going on.
Picard goes, Geordi, beam them out of here. He goes, Captain, I can't do it. They've locked us out. He goes, all right, I'm going to have a conference. They have a conference. He comes back out, and he's like, Geordi, can you turn the lights down? He does it. He goes... Still not working.
I mean, I don't know what to tell you. The modem is broken. I can't get on the internet.
But that was the other... It continues the weird Riker thing. I thought Riker was going to have to go in and, like, kick the lights out or something. And instead...
I don't know what he did, but...
Why can't you just tell... Does he have to go? Just be like, is there a crew member standing outside the med bay? Can you just turn the lights off?
Yeah, he... Picard nodded to Riker as though he was sending him to murder somebody. He's like, number two, and he's like, or number one. He's like, got it. Say no more.
And they had the long camera angle where he walks down the hallway and just turns the lights off on the panel outside the thing. And it's like, wow, that was... I hadn't seen it in a while. I expected him to go in the phaser and shoot the lights out. That would have made more sense. And he gets shot or something, you know, and it's like, oh... But no, it doesn't happen.
Then at the end when he goes in there and they do that like silhouette shot in the door, like he was getting ready to choke the crystal out with piano wire or something.
It's one other thing I noticed is someone who watches this a lot. This was the most transporter specific information I've ever seen in an episode. When he beams up the scientists up, he goes, beam the four in my vicinity, which makes sense. Yes. I've always wondered how when he's like, there's a crowd of people, and he's like, three to beam up, and people. Right. And how do they know that?
Oh, go ahead.
And then the crystal at the end, he's like, lock coordinates on the medical station that this thing is on and beam it out instead of just beam the alien out of
here. Well, it's funny you should say that because I think they were probably working some of those things out as they were going. Because I had another episode on the other day. Where I remember the last time I was here, I think we were talking about we never figured out how they know or why they don't just beam people to specific locations. Yep. It's always into the transporter
bay.
The episode begins with two people from another planet just appearing in the bridge.
Yep.
And I think Crusher or someone says, what are you doing? You didn't go through transporter bay.
Oh, it's like quarantines.
Decontamination. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah. Instead of just like beam me to the bathroom.
Right. Yeah. You actually have to go. It's basically like a little customs office. You have to kind of, like that. That does make more sense.
Right here, transporter room. I'm going to pee in the corner. If you could transport the pee to the bathroom, that would be great.
And
I would do that. That's what I would use it for.
Well, it ties into, here's my philosophical question to you. It ties into sort of the transporter thing. It's another thing I'm always confused by. The communicator.
Mm.
When they tap, how does the science of the communicator work? Because he always goes, Riker to bridge, right? So, but the person on the bridge hears that entire statement. So it's not connecting bridge, this is Riker to Picard.
Right.
So is he just is everyone who's working, is their communicator just going off with everyone who's talking about everything at all times and they just have to sit there and like listen to this stuff?
Well, A, doesn't matter.
Doesn't
B, when they do something like Riker to bridge, I always assumed that was like over the speakers in the bridge or something like that. So it was more to the ship more than it was to a specific person.
Exactly, but it's still capturing his entire sentence from beginning. So the communicator must know his thoughts prior to it, like, coming through the bridge, because otherwise you would just hear, bridge, like, that would be his statement.
Oh, you're talking about on the listening end.
Where right.
It'll say, the first thing they'll hear is Riker to bridge.
Right, if he tapped and went, and he's like, Riker needs to talk to the bridge, and it's like, connecting to the bridge. And they did that, it would make more sense than the way it is now, where he just taps it and says Riker to the bridge, and everyone hears that entire statement.
Right.
And they go ahead, number one.
Yeah, I am leaning towards it doesn't matter.
It does not matter. It's something that eats my brain every time I see it, though. I'm like, why is that working?
Well,
like that?
I'm surprised that, the answer that the writers would probably give you is it depends where they tap on the thing.
Yes.
So if you
tap
at the top, it brings you to the bridge, something like that. You know, I'm surprised that's never been like a thing where it's like some sort of like tapping scheme or something, but it's probably too complicated.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen anything where someone is trying to call for help and someone's stopping them from like tapping their communicator, which you'd think would be something that would kind of happen.
Yeah. If I was going to fight someone from Starfleet, the first thing I would do is pull that thing off their chest.
However it attaches, sometimes when they put it on, it's obviously just Velcro in like a real world sense.
Right.
It just sticks right on. But however it works in the actual Star Trek universe.
Well, they're going to have to figure that out when they start mass producing those that work for real.
I know.
Now that they have the communicator watches.
Yep.
They're going to need to figure out the communicator.
The adhesive science is more complicated than the actual real science. But yeah, it's a. I was happy with that episode. Any final thoughts on it?
Yeah, that's definitely the best one I've seen.
Yeah,
you know, for the podcast. I was glad that it was as good as it was, because after I read the breakdown, I was like, man, he's really making me work so I can get to that Q in the Borg episode that I want to do.
Season two, always away.
Yeah.
No, that'll be good. I mean, it's these early grindy episodes just to get through. There's not many more left. I must be on episode 18 by now.
Yeah.
I think there's 26, so I'll finish those up pretty soon. And then season two, things start to get good, and there's also a lot of bad in season two.
The thing that I always forget about this show is how long the seasons are.
Yep.
When I was going through and watching it a couple of years ago, I was stunned that every season was like 22 to 25 episodes.
Yeah.
Which was a good 3 or 4 episodes longer than most regular shows. Even back then when, you know, regular season was like 20 episodes.
Yep, 22.
So by the time you get to the end of the show, which is what, 7 seasons?
Yep.
They've got basically another season's worth of shows.
Yep. It's 200 episodes in 7 seasons.
Oof.
It's crazy. I mean, cause maybe Sean, did you watch Lost? Cause Lost had 20 episodes a season, didn't it?
Did they really?
I think they were like right at the end of networks, so like we have to have all shows have 20 episodes.
I thought Lost was the show that started the mid-season break thing.
Where they had two like 10 or 13 episode seasons.
Yeah.
It could be. I didn't watch Lost, but
I didn't watch it.
That was always the thing about it, was like, people were probably pissed off just because of how many goddamn episodes there were of that show.
Yeah.
I might be totally wrong about that, but I remember just being like, oh, that was because same with 24, which was the same time. 24 is the gimmick, you know, is an hour for each episode, but the season is interminably long.
Yes.
When that's the gimmick, it's like, this is unbelievable. How many ups and downs can you have in a day?
I didn't think that show was going to make it past one season, not because it was bad, but I figured, oh, okay. Well, I mean, how many times can you do that gimmick?
Right.
Apparently a lot.
You just keep it would have been great.
Many times.
It would have been great as a one season gimmick.
Yeah.
It would have been perfect.
Or, you know, once every couple of years or something.
Yeah. Like, a totally different day.
Yeah. I wish they would do, people have been talking about bringing back the X-Files.
Yeah.
I wish they would do what they did for 24 this past year, where they brought it back for like a 12 episode miniseries or something. Which is hilarious for 24 when you're just completely undermining the concept of the show.
And speaking of X-Files, the Deep Throat was the villain in the previous episode.
That's the one. That's the one where they talk about the transporter thing. That
when they come onto the show, they do that.
Yeah, that was an X-Files heavy one because he was in that, and it was directed by Kim Manners, who is a big X-Files director.
Oh, is she really? She only did that one Next Generation. Oh, it's a guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He did a lot of X-Files.
Oh, I was making an ass of myself. I was like, oh, it's a woman directing and writing team. Incorrect. It's a man. Apologies. We'll go back.
And he's dead now, so you can't even apologize to him.
Oh, well, goddammit. Hopefully he didn't die in the past week where I'm in this. Is that what took him out?
No.
Like, what is this random podcast on the end? Oh.
No, he did a lot of good TV.
Yeah.
Good director. Yeah.
I'll have to look at their IMDb's to be more careful about this.
But they've been talking about... they meaning the internet, so it doesn't mean anything. But doing another Star Trek show.
Yes, they're considering animated.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't care about that.
We'll wrap it up with this discussion. See what you think. It's the as I'm watching these again, I don't know if you can if Star Trek makes sense in modern television.
Yeah.
Because the way Deep Space Nine was almost as far as you could take it towards a modern type show, where it got a little bit dark, but it was still, even the darkest DS9 episodes are not as, you know, they're 0.1% of like a Breaking Bad, like with the terms of like moral dilemmas that are actually going on, like, or at least it's not conveyed that way. And now it's like everything's so serialized. It's tough to just have these... The fact that the shows are non-serial makes them seem less important than the shows are trying to get their points across.
Yeah, I've noticed that too, because I noticed especially with something like Breaking Bad or... there's another one specifically.
Even Mad Men, something like
that. Yeah, where a lot of times I've seen people criticize the shows that are sort of standalone episodes as being filler episodes.
Yes.
When it's like, if you watch TV 15 years ago, then it would all be filler episodes.
Every other episode is a filler. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Nothing is really tying anything in it.
Yeah, quote unquote filler. Yeah, because it wasn't until basically the X-Files where they started doing the sort of season-long arc kind of thing. And even there, every other episode was a standalone show.
Yeah.
So, it just has to be. I don't know. I think it's...
My point would be, if you made a modern drama-type Star Trek, it would not feel like Star Trek. Like, it would just be like, this is strange, and I know it's so dated, but I really take comfort in the fact of how just like... sort of la-di-da and sort of silly Next Generation. You know, it's like, it's just comfort food. Like, you gotta sit there and you watch and you're like, oh, that's
You can
fun.
Throw on any episode and understand what's going on.
Right, and not...
If you know what the concept is.
Yeah, nothing has a big, like, sort of explanation to get through.
The one show that... The one version of Star Trek that kind of tried to do that a little bit was Voyager, wasn't it? Because wasn't their whole thing that they ended up...
No.
Like years away or lost or something.
Voyager was a disaster because they didn't do that. Their whole gimmick was set up to make them serial.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
And they completely abandoned that principle. Yeah. Well, they set up, I mean, the whole Voyager pilot is like, oh, shit, we're way out here.
Right.
And it's like replicators are low, we have low, they're eating rations, you know? Yeah. It's like, because they have to conserve energy.
I remember watching that pilot and thinking, looks like it's going to be a good show. But then I think I watched maybe a season and I got pretty bored with it.
No, it's not. It was not. I mean, the ship, it's nowhere near Starfleet. the ship gets hugely damaged,
mm-hmm.
but then it looks fine. The next, you know,
yeah.
But the end of, if you were like really being considered what Voyager was supposed to be about, by the end of the thing, the ship should look almost like totally different from how
yeah.
it left. And
yeah.
like, it, you know, it just kind of crawls back and
yeah.
is like falling apart. But they didn't do that. And they also, the other gimmick of Voyager was that they had a, before they get sent off, they are like attacking a Maquis crew or something. Maquis mm-hmm. are like terrorists mm-hmm. in Starfleet, basically. And so they beam the Maquis aboard, and then they get sent off to this distance, and the whole plot, you know, conflict is that there's a terrorist crew now forced to work side by side with a Starfleet crew.
Yeah.
And they didn't do anything with
well,
it.
Well, see, because I was thinking about how to do... I think you're right that if you did a Star Trek show now, it probably wouldn't feel like Next Generation or so. But I think what might be kind of interesting is if you use that to your advantage. So you did something a little different where it wasn't just, okay, excuse me. It wasn't just, okay, this is the new version of the Enterprise. This is the new crew. We're going
right.
to, we're going to do what we've always done.
Yep.
If you did something more, I don't know, that would let you to, would allow you to go a little darker, like
a war storyline.
Yeah. Or taking maybe, a bunch of Starfleet guys and pairing them with some Klingons or something where, you know, you get into situations where, well, Starfleet is supposed to stay out of things, but in order to get to point B, we've got to go through the neutral zone or some shit.
Yeah,
like that.
There's a, that's kind of interesting you bring up. There's a thing in DS9, what are they called? I'm going to fuck it up and expose my ignorance, but in DS9, as the war, the Dominion War is a big
I'm
thing.
Already tweeting at you and yelling.
Yeah, as the Dominion War is continuing on, they reveal that Starfleet has like a CIA agency. They're called mm-hmm. like Section 31 mm-hmm. or something. And they're like top secret kind
yeah,
of. They do assassinations
be, yeah.
and stuff like that.
That would be cool.
They could do that with a, you know, keep it exactly in the Star Trek universe, but actually have it be like morally contentious
right,
about
right.
what's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat. You know, and it would allow you to explore some, I mean, shit. I mean, there's what? 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 different versions of this show.
Yep.
Plus 11, 12 movies.
Yep.
There's not a lot they haven't covered. But it would allow you to do some things that were, you know, a little bit more out there. And,
yeah,
and
in complete opposition of what the shows have all been so far,
yeah.
which is like everyone is kumbaya and
yeah.
sort of explored the world.
Or what they should do. They should do an entire series that takes place in the mirror universe where everybody has goatees.
And they have mirror episodes where they go to the normal
yeah.
Enterprise and it's just like, well.
That would be awesome.
I didn't realize, I was watching some DS9. I didn't realize DS9 had so many episodes that dealt with the mirror universe.
Do they?
Yeah. They don't all have goatees.
When I think of, DS9, I just think of like the more boring episodes of TNG.
Yeah.
Because I've never watched DS9, but. The few episodes I saw were just like diplomacy episodes, which
yes.
bore the shit out of me.
It's, if you watch only DS9 from season 4 to the finish,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty enjoyable. Worf appears in season 4.
Right.
But yeah, before that, it's pretty much garbage. It's the same with the Riker gets his beard when Sisko shaves his head.
Oh,
that's when shit starts getting serious.
Have you seen the Shatner documentary, The Captains?
Yes. Avery Brooks is insane.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to say he's insane, man. He's just, you know, living his life, connecting with the spirits or mm-hmm. something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Although, I mean, if you watch it, yeah, he's such a weird actor, too. Just say you, it's a little bit off tangent, but it's like, if you watch him, you're like, is Avery Brooks even a good actor? I can't
yeah.
tell. He misses some emotions so completely. He's awesome at, like, brooding anger.
Mm-hmm.
Which is eventually what the show focused, so it became a little bit better. But he's horrible at sort of like happiness.
Yeah.
Kind of. It comes across as very, very strange.
Yeah.
I don't know. He seems strange. Everyone says that he interviews with the crew and everything, like he was called Mr. Brooks, like his entire
really?
Time. Where, yeah. So.
Here's how you do a new Star Trek show. This is your setup. Set it up like a basic Star Trek show. First episode. Send the away team down to go investigate something, including the captain, even
mm-hmm.
though that makes no sense.
Yep.
they all get killed.
Yep.
So then the rest of your ship has to figure out how to run the ship. So it's like everybody, basically, the ranks of Picard through like Data.
Yep.
Just gone.
Just wiped out.
Yeah. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah. Just, yeah, you'd have a, yeah, make rank less important and just sort of spread out everything. It would be cool. There's a lot of good ideas about what they, where they could go with this series. And doing this has actually made me sad. It's like, oh, it's probably not going to happen.
Make all of them Time Lords. I mean, one of them is Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And then another one is, I don't know, some character from Two and a Half Men.
Just character.
Heaping sacks of cash all the way to the bank.
Absolutely. It would be a, it'd be a thing. And I mean, now the new movies have just made it so that time travelers, you can do whatever you want because these are in different dimensions and nothing has to match up. Which
if,
is,
if you ever do an episode where you talk about the movies.
Yeah, I will do the movies after this series, I think.
If you extend into the new movies, I would love to come for Star Trek Into Darkness.
Into Darkness.
And just shit all over that movie. Because I hated that movie.
They are... Yeah. What's the problem with the thing we just talked about? They're not Star Trek. They are action movies that sort of happen to be in a Star Trek
universe. I don't want to get into it now, but that wasn't even like the base... Basically, my problems start with the fact that they have Old Man Spock on speed dial.
Yes.
So anything that they're like, oh, let's call Spock and ask him.
What happened in his...
And Spock's just like, yeah, man, what do you want
to
know?
And that's what Kirk is in the... Because they want Shatner to be in the third one.
Yeah.
And he is going to be that same exact role because he is the older Kirk in that other mirror universe. But yeah, that's it. We'll call it there before we get... sucked into a whole thing about why these Star Trek movies are so strange. But yeah, thank you, Clay, for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
We're eventually going to wrap up season one and get back to it. But yeah, Home Soil, we give it two thumbs up, I'd assume. Two, not immediate, but two gradual thumbs up.
And yeah, I would say so. Well, if your thumb rating is based on the ones that we've seen already, then yes.
This episode's a three for me, for those keeping score, and I'll have a end of season rank coming up soon. But yeah, thank you very much, guys. I will see you later.